Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I'm your host, Joanna DeVoe, and this is a happy, hippie place where magic with a K meets the law of attraction. Hi, thanks for joining me for episode 42 of Hippie Witch, Magic for a New Age. My name is Joanna DeVoe, and I am the holly jolly gift wrapping, soul mapping creatrix behind Kick-Ass Witch, putting the K in magic. And of course, Hippie Witch, the show you are listening to right now. I also have a free ebook by that name, Hippie Witch, Peace, Love, and All That Good Shit. As I keep mentioning week after week, and you can pick up a copy of that at www.joannadevoe.com. And I've put a link to that on the description page for this episode back at Blog Talk Radio. I also just ate a whole bunch of chocolate, yummy dark chocolate, and I'm so thirsty, so you might hear me like gulping through this, but it's Christmas time and somebody gave me chocolate and I had to eat it. And before we begin, first let me wish you all a very happy holiday. Happy solstice, happy Yule, happy Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever you celebrate or don't celebrate. Happy Christmas Eve. My son woke me up this morning. He was so excited. But we have like a rule of being quiet in our house first thing in the morning because he likes to talk in monotone at the top of his lungs from the second he opens his eyes. So he came over to me and he whispered, he goes, "Mom, Santa Claus is coming to town tonight." And he was so excited. He still believes in Santa Claus and I'm not going to burst his bubble. So I'm excited for him. And, you know, with the Psycho Spiritual Wheel of the Year program that I have been talking so much about because we have this new module out for winter solstice, there's so many holidays at this time of year. And I thought that I was going to talk about Yule and even maybe like the pagan origins of Christmas. And I got into this whole thing. And then I started thinking about all the other holidays and how I could tie those in. And that's kind of the direction I took. And I don't know if you've been following me, if you've watched my recent videos or if you follow me on Facebook, but I said that I literally was just deleting and scrapping everything that I came up with because nothing was really clicking and resonating with me. And then I just prayed for guidance because I don't want to waste people's time and money, and I want to be inspiring and keep on this theme of helping people create the kick-ass life of their dreams. And I was like, please just give me some guidance, you know, let me say something that will resonate with people and make this program worth their while. And I woke up and had this idea about how the winter solstice is really the new year. It's about the birth of a new solar year, which is why we celebrate the birth of the sun god, which was originally Sun, S-U-N, the son of God. And that got me, I was just like up and running after I had that thought. And so the whole thing is really about creating the kick-ass life of your dreams in 2014, this winter module, this winter solstice module. So that got me excited because that applies to anybody and everybody. You can be an atheist. You don't have to celebrate the holidays, you know, to get into that little pin that I put up on my website. Axiom Tilt is the reason for the season. We all can relate to that because that is, you know, a physical, almost tangible fact that happens to us here. It affects our seasons, it affects our moods, it affects the food that's available to us and the whole planet. So I kind of went with that theme and focused on, you know, how this new, with this new birth of light, we can have this new year. So if that interests you, or if you're thinking, oh, I missed the winter solstice, I'll, you know, I urge you to go and hop on board with us all. We're just getting started in the private Facebook group, and it's really about starting your new way, your new year in a new way and approaching the new year from a place of wonder and gratitude and getting very still and quiet in what is, rather than activating that whole divide and conquer, list making, resolution breaking, because we all end up doing that, most of us, anyways, in the end, way of, you know, with ambition and force, like moving into the new year with all of this excitement and energy that often just peters out after a couple of weeks. If you work out at the gym, you'll notice like all of a sudden all these people at the gym for the first couple of weeks of January, and it slowly goes back to the way it was before, which is, it's just a funny cycle you'll notice if you're a person that regularly works out at the gym, because over a third of us who make resolutions will break them within the first few weeks of January, and only about 20 of us actually see them to fruition at all. And I wonder, like, is that because we're a bunch of lazy, delusional hacks? I don't think so. I think it has to do with the kinds of goals that we're setting for ourselves, which are actually, they're usually based on a bunch of shoulds. I should lose this weight. I should quit smoking. I should be nicer to my husband. And should is one of the least effective motivators on the planet. It's practically useless besides its dazzling ability to create a whole lot of guilt and stress. At that, it is brilliant. So let's just all strike should from our vocabularies right now. We don't need it. It's out of here. See ya. No shoulds in 2014. And then there are other reasons that I think we don't achieve those goals and resolutions that we make for ourselves at the beginning of the year. But I will talk about that later in future weeks. But for the winter module, I'm just hoping we can all bring it down a few notches and hold off on making those goals and resolutions for now and just focus on the here and now, on being here and getting in touch with not our feelings, but what it is we want to feel and what we want to experience, and starting from that point of what we want to feel. So if you want to sign up for that, you can go to my website, joannadeveaux.com, www, be sure to put that in, www.joannadeveaux.com, and you'll be able to sign up there. There's a psychospiritualwheeloftheyear.com website. Again, you have to put www before you can get there. But anyway, this show is actually a supplement to that, because I wanted to make this information available to everyone, not just to the people taking the Winter Solstice module. So it's for you if you're in the Winter Solstice module, and if you're in that Facebook group and you're approaching the new year from that way, and it's for you if you are just listening to this show. We are going to get into how fate is a container for your soul's destiny. And this is the biggest lesson of 2013 for me. It's the biggest takeaway for me. And it's something that I knew I wanted to do a show on, but I wanted to save it to the end of the year. So I've kind of been like, biding my time and chomping at the bit to get to this show, because it was a really exciting epiphany for me that I had, thanks to Robert Ojeda, who I talk a lot about here on the show, because the last couple years of listening to his radio show and reading his book, Transforming Fate into Destiny, it's really validated some thoughts that I had about the New Age movement and the law of attraction, and some thoughts that I was having that I thought were just my own, some feelings that I was having about some of the ideas that go on in the New Age movement. Robert Ojeda has a very authoritative way of putting his thoughts and ideas out there very confidently, and he, like, said it for me, and I was like, yes, that is exactly what I think. That's exactly what I feel. And when I got to this place where I was reading Transforming Fate into Destiny, and I came to understand this whole concept of fate being a container for your soul's destiny, that was one of the biggest pivots for me this year. And it's hard to explain, because it wasn't something that I can't say, well, I didn't think that before. It was just, it gave me a language and a framework for something I guess I believed. He taught me something I already knew, and he gave me a way to frame it or a way to present it that I think is really exciting. So hopefully you will agree with me. So, like witches, believe in magic. We believe in the power to create change in conformity with one's will. The law of attraction practitioners out there, and I'm a person who has my foot in both camps, and that is why I talk about both. But people who practice the law of attraction, they believe in the same or very similar thing depending on the practitioner. They're just using a different language. We believe we have the power to create change in conformity with our will. Some of us believe that anything is possible. And some people even go so far as to say this is like a holographic universe and your thoughts are creating your reality. Where to start? When I first learned the law of attraction, I, like probably everybody who first gets into it, thought that was true and that your thoughts create your reality. Then I kind of moved on to like, no, it's not your thoughts, it's your feelings that create your reality. It's your feelings that are magnetic. I still believe that. But now I have come to a deeper understanding of how this all works, and that is that, yes, your thoughts and feelings can create your reality. Yes, it's your feelings that have that magnetic quality. Yes, you have to put action with that feeling to really get it into motion. Thoughts, feeling, action, it all comes into play in manifesting what it is you want to create. But without an understanding of how fate comes into play with all of that, you could be doing yourself a disservice and creating a lot of frustration for yourself. So, for example, when my son was very little, I worked at Warner Brothers, and I used to sing this song to him. I had to drive him a lot to daycare and back, you know, before and after work. And it was before he had very much language, but I used to sing to him all the time. That's partly how I taught him how to talk. And I would sing this little song that I made up out of thin air one day. I don't know, but it would go, "I create the life I choose. Anything I want can be." And I shared that with a friend of mine at work at Warner Brothers one day, and he was like, "That's not true. You shouldn't teach your son that. That's not true." And he knew my son had autism, and I remember being very offended, like, my son can be anything he wants to be. But when I came back around on this whole transforming fate into destiny and fate being a container for your soul's destiny, I actually remembered that conversation with my friend Mark and him, like, telling me I shouldn't be singing that song to my kid, and it brought all of that in to alignment with this whole law of attraction thing about how you can create anything you want, your heart's desire. And I started thinking, is that true? Anything I want can be? And I started seeing it from Mark's perspective. Mark is the friend back in the day that said that to me. It was a long time ago. Took me a while to get into agreement with him. So can I create anything I want? Maybe. Maybe if you're looking at it from a soul perspective, if that I is the great I behind this whole operation, you know, this earthly existence I have going, the soul that is beyond my ego, beyond my material position and desires, then yes, anything I want can be. But what if my soul wants something different than what my ego thinks I need? Or what about my shadow? You know, I often say that my son saved my life because in a lot of ways he did. If I had not had Tanner, if my husband, his dad, did not leave us alone in Hollywood with no money, and if my son was not diagnosed with autism, my life would have been completely different, and I honestly think I would have been a mess. I was in Hollywood to be an actress. I was cute and young and getting a lot of attention. And I could totally see myself becoming some crazy, like, video vixen, you know, or just getting addicted to cocaine or getting into a lot of bad stuff. I have no idea where I would have gone, but I definitely had, like, the party girl spirit and having to take care of this child and all of the restrictions that autism created in our lives. It shaped who I was. It forced me to be responsible when I was not at all a responsible person, at all. Not kidding. I was extremely wild, and my son really, like, anchored me down and forced me to focus in a way that I wouldn't have otherwise, and he really could have saved me from a lot of bad stuff. And from the perspective of someone like Robert Ojeda or Carolyn Mace, they would say that my son was sent here as part of my soul's contract, that my son and I's souls had this contract, and that he may have come down here to keep me on my true path or to teach me lessons or vice versa, or we might be here to learn together. Some people believe, Robert Ojeda, Carolyn Mays, Teal Scott, that our souls choose the path that we're going to, the fate that we're going to be born into, you know, when we come to this earth, the families that we're going to be born into, the challenges that are going to be presented to us. Robert Ojeda calls it your cosmic contract. Carolyn Mays calls it your sacred contract. And I want to say right now, and I've said it before, but I'm going to say it for the record, especially for those of you who are new to my show, I don't believe that. I don't not believe that, but I don't believe that. I can enjoy the work of these people anyways. I love Robert Ojeda. I love Carolyn Mays. Robert Ojeda is one of my favorite spiritual teachers, and he very firmly believes that we have a cosmic contract and that our fate, part of our fate, is created before we come to this planet. Those are decisions that we make, experiences that we choose to go through, experiences that our soul chooses to go through in order to further come into alignment with who we really are. I don't know if I believe all that. I think it's a beautiful theory. I know he would say it's not a theory, it's a fact. So I would love to have him on my show every which way. He's someone I would love to interview. So maybe we'll get to have that conversation and share that with you all one day. But for now, I urge you to read Transforming Fate into Destiny, A New Dialogue with Your Soul, or to go listen to his radio show, Soul Connections. It's fabulous work, and you do not have to share that belief to enjoy what he has to say. I certainly do. I take a lot from it. I'm just a person who, I say, I live for the mystery, and I don't have any answers about what God is, what happens to us after we die, what happens to us before we are born. I like the mystery, and I love to explore all the options, and some days I'm a little more atheist in my beliefs. Most of the time I have a kind of a pantheist perspective, and sometimes I can get really down with, you know, these new age spiritual ideas. So I just stay loose and open, and I guess I'll find out when I find out, when I die, you know. But that doesn't take away from the lesson of fate being a container for your soul's destiny. And he explains in the book that fate and destiny are two words that are often confused. And then he goes on to differentiate between the two. So fate is what happens to you. Fate primarily, here, this is what he says in his words. I'm going to riff on a few sentences here that I wrote down from the book. Fate primarily serves as the vessel and structure through which our destiny is fulfilled and contained. Destiny is the doing. Fate is the being. Destiny is that which you create within the boundaries of fate you're given. I think this sentence makes it easier even to understand. Fate is the hand of cards that life deals you, and destiny is how you play it. that's my favorite one. That's the simplest way to put it. So fate is the hands of cards. That's the hand of cards you've been dealt. That's the life you've been dealt. Destiny is what you do with that hand. It's how you play it. And then he goes on to explain that there's different kinds of fate, and the two that he focuses on is mortal fate and self-fate. So mortal fate, it's the conditions and situations that are out of your control. It's things like a tsunami, a birth defect, the sudden loss of a loved one. It also has to do with the way that you essentially look and the gifts you were born with. It's often the things that cannot be changed, things that are out of your control. Self-fate are self-made trials that you unconsciously create for yourself from a place of ego, or maybe when the shadow is having its way with you. So it's very important to get conscious and to do your shadow work so that you create less of this self-fate for you. So using my own life as an example, my mortal fate would be my biological dad died before I was born. And a lovely man named Rick Hickson married my mom when I was a baby and stepped into that position and raised me. I was raised in a very Christian household. We were Mennonite brethren. I have blonde hair and blue eyes. I am musically inclined. Those are parts of my mortal fate. I was gifted with a son with autism, which is partially to do with my self-fate. Remember, those self-fates are trials that you unconsciously create for yourself. And part of my self-fate, you know, are things like I got married when I was 18 years old. I chose to have a baby when I was 20 years old. And then that starts morphing into mortal fate when that baby, you know, is diagnosed with autism. And that's when my self-fate and my mortal fate start blending together. All the bad choices that I've made in my life, and I've made so many, have further created more fate for myself. But can you see the difference there between mortal fate and self-fate? Some of it is beyond our control, and some of it we unwittingly create for ourselves. But I like what Ohado has to say. He says, what if we learned to honor fate by surrendering to its limitations as a form of guidance? So whether you're creating that fate for yourself, whether it's mortal fate, it's something that's out of your control, what if there were ways to forge a conscious relationship with these restrictions? What if we could use the things that happen to us as arrows pointing us toward a new horizon of yet to be potential? So the big question is, what will you do with what fate has handed you? Limitations can serve creativity. After all, it's your life is one big creative adventure, or it can be if that's how you choose to see it, and it probably is whether you choose it to see it that way or not. Every choice you make, every decision, every action or non-action is an act of creation. I'm a very creative, artsy person, so this is a concept that really resonates with me. Jack White, my rock god, he talks a lot about that when he'd been interviewed about the White Stripes. The White Stripes was a rock band that he did with Meg White, him on guitar, her on drums, and then he sang and did the vocals. Sometimes she sang with us. But he would talk about how those restrictions of just having the three sounds, the guitar, the drums and the vocal, and then also the color restrictions, everything had to be red, black, and white. He talked about how working within those limits, within that container, within those restrictions, gave birth to this whole wild creativity, and that he was able to be more creative because of the limitations, which ties back into what I was saying about boundaries and how children need boundaries. I don't know if you listened to that episode. I was talking about how my cat Steve was a lunatic until we put some boundaries in place for him that helped him calm down. And there is, in fact, something called choice paralysis, which you may relate to when you think about those moments when you're scrolling through, like, all 120 channels on your cable TV while declaring, there's nothing to watch on TV, or you're rummaging through your overstuffed closet while complaining that you have nothing to wear. We call these first world problems. If you give a toyless child in a third world country, give him a rock and a stick, he can entertain himself for hours. His imagination will take flight. He can go in any direction he wants with that rock and that stick. It's a mortar and a pestle, and he's making a magical potion. It's a drum, and he's a rock star. It's a boulder and a lever, and he's going to war with the ants. Whereas if you put a first-world child in a room stuffed with all manner of plastic and electronic toys with all the bells and whistles, he'll end up complaining that he's bored. That is choice paralysis. It's the paradox of choice. Sometimes the more you have, the less you have. And that is one of the things that I mentioned in the gratitude as a guide section of the winter module of the Psycho-Spiritual Wheel of the Year. And I ask, you know, that you think about this. I ask some questions. I say, have you ever wondered what makes a man who lost his legs in battle decide to strap on a pair of prosthetics and start running a marathon, training for a marathon? Have you ever wondered how a kid who grew up being ruthlessly bullied for being different can grow up to be a confident, outspoken gay rights activist? Or how a size 16 girl might move to New York City to pursue a career in modeling? It happens. Things like this happen all the time, and they happen when gratitude happens. Gratitude for what is, and gratitude for what can be. Of course, before you can get to gratitude, you have to get to a place of acceptance. You can't be grateful for something if you haven't fully accepted it. If you're still wallowing in self-pity, raging with anger, or playing the martyr, those may all be healthy, even necessary phases to go through. And I say by all means, feel those feelings, but continue to move through them and don't let them turn into your full-time occupation. You've got to find a way to move beyond the hurt, beyond the anger, beyond the sadness and that paralyzing fear into a place of acceptance. And only then will you be able to see the gift in your limitations. And only then will you be able to experience gratitude for what it is you have left, if only a few more breaths in your lungs, and only then will you be able to make the most of it. You can choose to see your limitations, your fate, whether it is mortal fate or self-fate, as a kind of guidance system. You can choose to be grateful for your limitations when you see them as blaring neon signs pointing you in the direction of your soul's destiny. Maybe your soul made that choice for you in an attempt to direct you toward the kick-ass life of your dreams, a dream so big, so outside your current limited realm of thinking that you haven't even dared to dream it yet. Les Brown, I don't know who Les Brown is, but I love to look up quotes on the internet. I get such a kick out of that, and I always sprinkle them throughout the programs I do when I post them on Facebook, as so many of us do. Love the quotes, the inspirational quotes. But whoever Les Brown is, you can tell me if you want. He says, just because fate doesn't deal you the right cards, it doesn't mean you should give up. It just means you have to play the cards you get to their maximum potential. And that's what I mean by saying that fate is the container for your soul's destiny. Fate is those limitations that Jack White was talking about, the three colors, the drum, the guitar, and the vocals, instead of having the full orchestra. Sometimes when you're limited, that's when your creativity can really take off. And that's what you have to work with anyways. It really doesn't matter if your soul made those decisions for you. It doesn't matter if there is a God and he has a bigger plan for you. What matters is that's your reality. Your reality is, okay, you lost your home in that fire. What are you going to do about it? Okay, you are going to lose your arm in this operation. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to work with that? Okay, your husband is leaving you, and he's not coming back. So now what? What are you going to do with it? That's your fate. That's your fate. That's what's happening to you. That's what is. But that's not your destiny. Your destiny is what you make of that. Your destiny is how you move in that container and beyond that container, how you start thinking outside the container, how you start thinking outside the box and making up new ways to live with one arm, making up new ways to be a divorcee in this world, making up your own rules, getting really creative, bringing law of attraction. 60 seconds left. Bringing law of attraction into play. Working your magic, using your will to create change, creating change in conformity with your will, creating the kick-ass life of your dreams on purpose within the container of fate, working with what you've got. And I might get cut off here, but I'm going to try to read you Invictus by William Ernest Henley before I go. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Much love. Peace.